Librarian Emeritus of Youngstown State University for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project on the History of Youngstown University by Terrence Lynch at 417 South Main Street, Bolton, Ohio, on May 4th, 1977, at 2 p.m. Dr. Jones, would you please speak a little of your background previous to coming to Youngstown University?
I was born in Mount Vernon, Ohio, and I did my undergraduate college work at Oberlin College, and then I did my graduate work, my doctor's degree is from Harvard. I taught first at the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York, and it was from there that I was drafted into World War II and spent 2 years and a half in the South Pacific on a landing ship. And when I came back, I went to Lawrence College in Wisconsin. And I taught there, and then I decided I wanted to stop teaching and be a librarian. So I took a master's degree in library science at Kent State University, and from there I came to Youngstown University in September of 1957.
Thank you. Was there anything special to the college or area that played a role in your decision to come to Youngstown College?
Well, the first day I came here, I had a feeling this place needs me. I had never seen an as loosely structured and undisciplined college in my life. And when I walked into that beautiful new library, which was covered with cigarette stubs and people sitting all over the tables, and the entire place in commotion, I thought, I'd like to get hold of this place and straighten it out. And this was my very first impression when I walked into the place.
What was the college like when you came here?
Well, it was not a very serious academic atmosphere. Students were given complete freedom to do as they pleased. Many of the jobs, which in another institution would have been performed by a faculty member or a clerical, mature person, were handled by students. And on the library staff, there were many students. The order department didn't have a professional librarian. All of the ordering was done by students. And the whole atmosphere was one of easygoing, good nature. I was quite felt welcome. Everybody was glad to see me when I arrived, and the spirit of the place was a very friendly spirit.
What was a typical day like for you? What was a typical day like for you at the university?
Yes. I came as director of the library, and I had a very pleasant office, nicely furnished. Everything about it was quite nice. I made the rounds of the building when I first arrived in the morning. Because of the discipline problems, I felt that was the essential thing to do first. And then when I also wanted to consult with the heads of each of the departments to see if they had any questions and had any thing that I needed to know about. And then I went back to my desk, and since we didn't have an order librarian, I did all the book selection myself with the help of book requests which came in from the faculty. And very largely, my day was occupied in the ordering of books. And in fact, as long as I was the librarian, that was one of the most important things to me, to build up the book collection. I was not as interested in administrative details as I was in the book collection. I didn't say enough about the relation with the faculty. When you asked about my typical day, I went always to lunch at the college cafeteria, and in the old cafeteria, there was one room for the faculty, not a very big room, so that we were all crowded in there, and there was a very congenial atmosphere. We all knew each other quite well, and had many intimate jokes in common, that things that if one of us said something, two or three others in the neighborhood knew what the gist of that was and would enter into the merriment whenever we... for instance, there was such a nice elderly lady in the catalog department, Miss Newcomb, and I referred to her as Lightning. Because she was a very slow mover. And whenever I mentioned Lightning to anybody, everybody there knew who I meant. There were many faculty concerts by the School of Music faculty. They were held in the auditorium in the main hall, which was an extremely difficult place to have a concert because there was all evening a disturbance in the halls outside the auditorium, so that it did bother the music. The Dramatic Association gave as many plays at the beginning of my stay here as they do now, I would think. Perhaps not as many. And once a year, the School of Music put on opera. All of these were put on in the auditorium in the main hall. And the operas were extremely well done for the small amount of money that was spent on them, the small amount of costuming and scenery that they had. The director of the operas was Madame Kleber, a former opera singer who taught voice in the School of Music. And I look back on those one operas each year as highlights of my early days in Youngstown.
How long was the day usually? How long was your day?
I usually, it was always 9 to 5. Before I came, I had taught for many years, and one of the things that I liked about it was the idea that I was there from 9 to 5. However, for the first, I would say, 5 or 6 years, I took one evening a week because we didn't have enough professional librarians to last the 5 nights that we were open. We only had 4 professionals. So I, and we tried, we insisted always that there should be one professional in the library when it was open. And so I worked one night a week at the reference desk, answering reference questions for the first 5 or 6 years I was here.
Who were the outstanding professors and administrators in the years that you spent at YMCU?
I would place Carl Dykema as one of the outstanding professors. He was the chairman of the English department and was a scholarly man, very widely read. He was, of all the faculty, the one who was best acquainted with the library. He was in the library very often, and his friendship I prized very highly, and his advice whenever there was a problem about whether or not I should spend a large amount of money on a certain book or set of books, and I wanted to talk to somebody who would have the welfare of the university at heart, as well as not just a selfish want for a certain book, as some departments had, I would talk to Carl Dykema, and his advice I found was extremely helpful.
Public administrators.
Well, the administration was very loose. I had not been accustomed to an administration which didn't insist on work getting done and good teaching being performed. The administration did not oversee the faculty as I had always been accustomed. The many teachers were extremely lax in their teaching, and the students would tell me about it, and I knew that this situation existed. Many teachers walked into class without making any preparation. Many simply read out of a book for the class, length of the class time, and examinations were not held by some teachers on the exact schedule that was issued by the administration, but they would give the examination early and disappear before the term ended, which is a kind of teaching I had never seen before. Many of the teachers were spouses of other faculty members and had or alumni of the university who were hired to teach simply because they were in the area and applied for the job, and they were hired to do it.
What were the students like when you first came to Youngstown?
There were very many good students, whereas the majority were undisciplined and here only to have a good time. There was a corpus of very substantial students. There was a need for a university in this community. There were many students who couldn't afford to go elsewhere and who had the ability and had 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 gotten accustomed to reading and to studying. There were many who worked in the library, who were doing almost full-time jobs in the library, and yet were keeping up on their academic work and doing extremely well. There were, as I say, there was a great need in this community for that university. It couldn't have been held down, I guess is the word, by anybody, because there was this corpus of serious students who formed the university. They made the university.
How are they different today?
There, I don't see the waste rules around as much now as I did when I first came. They may be there, but I don't happen to run into them. When I'm on the campus, I'm always in the library or in at a concert or at a play where the more serious students would be anyhow. But a part of it is not just a change in Youngstown University, but a general change in students throughout the country. As I go around, there were times back in the 60s when students, not only at Youngstown University, but in other places, were up in arms against the Vietnam War and were protesting, making scenes. I was one of the few faculty who joined with them in marching in opposition to the Vietnam War, getting tomatoes thrown at me, and vituperation poured on me by people standing at the curb. But I felt very strongly that the students were right, and I wanted to support them. I had serious disagreement, I guess is the word, breach, perhaps, with the administration at that during those times, because I did agree with the protesters
In what ways is the university itself different than it was in, say, 1950s?
Well, there is a discipline now, which we didn't have then. The part of this comes from having money. Everything is luxurious now. All these beautiful new buildings have made it more like a big university. And now say the question again, right? Well,
in what ways is the university itself different from it was in the 1950s?
Now, I don't find that there are as many people who are teaching there for the love of it as there were then. I get the feeling every once in a while that the attraction is for the money rather than for the satisfaction of teaching. There were many devoted teachers in the early days. The one that comes first to my mind, although it's not the most prominent one, was Mrs. Morgan in the ancient language department. She taught Latin and Greek. And she was an extremely hard worker and taught a full schedule and was very seriously interested in all of her students. And she wasn't doing it for the money. She didn't get much money. Fortunately, her husband had a good job. But there were people of that kind. And I felt myself, I wasn't here for the money. I was here because the place needed me, and I felt I was doing something for the good of mankind. It was a very gratifying experience to me to come.
Do you think the main difference in the university now is that it has become a state institution rather than a private institution? Do you think that factor has to do with a lot to do with where the university is now?
I suppose that has a great deal to do with it, yes. Yes, I think you're right. There is that, I do have that feeling that it is because it's a state institution. I noticed I was always extremely careful, for instance, and frugal with office supplies. And I noticed every time I'm in the library, the way there are pencils thrown away all over the tables and tablets, half-used tablets of paper. Well, in the old days, this wouldn't have happened. We all were quite frugal in our use of office supplies.
What were some of the campus activities, both student and faculty activities?
Well, the ones that I liked best were the Dramatic Association, which put on very good plays. The drama group, there were... The chemistry department had a very active chemistry club. I'm not sure that that's what they called it. And the Spanish department had a very active Spanish club, and the students in Spanish, you were aware of them. They gave a scholarship each year, and they put on a book sale every year. That's one thing that I was interested in. And to raise money so that every year they sent one student to a Spanish-speaking country for the summer. There was a women's service sorority and a men's service fraternity that I was aware of always. They were always coming to me to ask if there were any good works that the library needed to have done. So that whenever we did something such as have an open house in order to advertise the library's availability to donors of books and gifts, it was those students who made the punch and cookies and served the refreshments at the receptions and greeted people at the door and did that sort of thing.
Do you think the university is more academically oriented now than it was previously?
Yes, in general. The entire all-over picture is of much more serious academic caliber. Although there are not as many devoted academicians as there were in the beginning. As I think of Mr. Dykema in English, Mr. Scudder in chemistry, and Mr. Worley in biology, Mr. the head of the education department. These were very serious scholars of a caliber which is the equal, if not the superior, of any of the serious scholars who are there now.
What was President Jones like?
He was a decidedly aural, A-U-R-A-L. Everything entered his mind by means of his ears. He was not a reader, nor a writer. He communicated by speaking to people, by hearing things and speaking. He was completely under the influence of Dean Smith. And that was a very interesting relationship. Dean Smith had been his teacher at Hiram. He majored under Dean Smith. And when he had finished college, Dean Smith was acquainted with the people at Youngstown. And they were looking for a young man to be the admissions director, which in those days meant that you had to go out and find students, so that Howard Jones was hired as to be the director of admissions at the college, which was not called director of admissions then, it was called assistant to the president. And when the president died, the Board of Trustees said, well, and it's what they had done in their businesses, they said, well, we have a man here who is the assistant, we'll make him be the director. And so they appointed Jones as the director of the college. And then in turn, his mentor at Hiram had recommended him to this job, so he brought in his mentor from Hiram to be the dean of this college at Youngstown, and the two worked together over the years. Dean Smith was really the person on whom the president depended in all decisions, as long as the two were working together. He admired him greatly, and anything that Dean Smith wanted to do, President Jones went along with it. I think perhaps the one of the outstanding things that I can recall about the president was that in making appointments, both to faculty and staff, he appointed people who were already here. He didn't go outside to get a capable person. He hired somebody who was already here. And relatives. There were his daughter, Mrs. Chewy, was on the faculty. Her husband, Mr. Chewy taught here. His nephew, Mr. Hurd, was hired to teach here. His niece, Mrs. Johnson, was hired to teach here. Even the college carpenter, Mr. Notman, was a cousin of the president. And in the process of hiring, he also hired Dean Smith's relatives. Mrs. Smith was the recorder, and the Smith's niece, Ivis Boyer, was the president's secretary, and her cousin, Betty Boyer, was in the business office. Her and Dean Smith's niece, Mrs. Foley, was taught in communication. Her husband, Mr. Foley, was in the public speaking department. The dean's niece's son, James Mitchell, was the receptionist in the president's office. Well, I could go on because the ramifications of the relatives of the president and the dean it was very evident that the family corporation to some extent, because all the relatives of both the president and the dean were in the employ of the university.
Did this make for a very close knit university, say in the 50s, among the administrators and faculty members?
Yes, I think it did. There was a yes, I think you worded it well. There was a unity in that respect, yes.
Well, what do you think the Youngstown different from other colleges?
Well, one of the main differences when I first came was this hiring of students to do so many things. Students did almost all of the taking care of the registration and the keeping of the records. Mrs. Smith, who was the recorder, had, I believe, 55 students working in the records office, which was in the basement of the library, unfortunately, because all 55 of her students went through the library all the time. Nobody ever entered that office from the outside basement door. Everybody entered from the going up through the library and visiting with their friends on their way to the records office. What was the rest of that question?
What do you think it made Youngstown different?
Yes. Well, that use of students was a great difference. There was also, and also the hiring of people who had other jobs in the community. Many of the faculty were part-time people who had jobs in the clerks in the stores were very widely used at the university as teachers in business administration and other courses.
Were there any codes of dress or codes of discipline at the college?
No, I wasn't ever aware of any code of dress or any code of discipline. From the top down, there was an obvious lack of discipline. I remember the first day practically I was here to see the dean of the university walk through the library smoking a cigarette and stamp it out on the floor was a shock to me. And that afternoon there was a faculty meeting on the third floor of the library in the audiovisual room, and the dean led the audience in smoking. Everybody smoked all over the place and stamped their cigarettes on the floor. And certainly indicates there was not a code of discipline in the institution.
Were the faculty members required to wear any certain type of dress?
Never, no. Nothing of that kind of thing I ever heard of.
How was the university promoted to the general public in terms of getting students to come?
Oh, the Vindicator was a great friend of that university. It built it up in any article that the Vindicator published about the university. It was always in very glowing terms. And also, they did not publish anything that happened at the university that was adverse to the university. Any thievery that took place or anything of that, and even automobile accidents that took place there. If it was at the university and it was adverse, it was never published in the Vindicator. They didn't ever say anything of that kind. And photographs of anything that the publicity director, Miss Finch, sent down to the Vindicator, they always published. Now, some of them I thought weren't worthy of usage, but if Miss Flint sent it in to them, they used it, no matter what a poor photograph it was. And the it was largely the Vindicator, which was the means of promotion, I would say.
How was the campus itself like in terms of building? How has it grown over the years?
Well, it was, when I came, all of the buildings were the main hall, the old Wick Mansion next door, and the garage to that mansion, and a series of barracks left over from World War II, and the new library. That had just been built when I arrived. The maintenance was extremely lacking. By the time I came, the influx of returning veterans was arriving, had arrived, so that the enrollment was 5,000, I believe, around 5,000, and there was ample money. It was no longer such a poor institution with all of these students paying tuition. But the administration was not in the habit of spending money on upkeep, so the litter and unkempt appearance of the place was rather depressing, very shocking, in fact. It was crowded in and just not well kept. And nobody oversaw the cleaning women. There were cleaning women who were to arrive at the library at 10 o'clock and were supposed to work all night and have it clean in the morning. But there was no supervision, so the cleaning women came at 10 o'clock and left at 6 o'clock the next morning, but there was no evidence that anybody had been there. The maintenance of the whole university was extremely lax.
Was there any place in the general university area that the students or faculty members frequently attended?
Well, students had to go to the library because there wasn't a student union. There was no place else to go. This was one reason why the library had so much commotion in it, was because there were three-quarters of the people there were only there because they didn't have any place else to go. And so they wandered in to have fun with their friends. And it kept anybody from getting any serious work done to have these people milling around in the library all the time. But I was sympathetic to them. They didn't have any place else to go. But I did my best to keep the building in line and have some semblance to a place to study.
What do you think were your major contributions to the university?
Oh, I think the building up of the book collection. When I came, the book collection was extremely weak. The largest part of it was the law collection. Every lawyer who had died in Youngstown from the time the law school started had given left his books to the Youngstown College Law Library, so that there was a large quantity of law books, but the quality was very poor, and the collection of books otherwise. I had difficulty getting the administration to allot money for books. The administration was of the opinion that we had a public library right across the street, and we didn't need to have money for books. I went out and pounded the street to get donations to the library, and had quite a few of the prosperous members of the community giving books to the library on a regular basis.
That leads me to the question, how was the university funded before it went state?
The community, as I said earlier, needed a university and wanted it, so that there were people in the community who were willing. And it also, at that time, the income tax exemption for giving to an educational institution was very favorable, so that you could give away money to the university without costing you very much. And there were many good donors. The industries in the community were very generous in their gifts to the university. They wanted the university here, just as the prosperous and educated people in the community wanted the university here. And it is not so remarkable that that university throve, because it was needed and the people wanted it. There was a demand for the university. It wasn't something that had to be foisted onto them. You couldn't have stopped it. You couldn't have stopped all these gifts because the people wanted to do it.
Is there anything you would like to change?
Well, yeah, that question is meaningless to me, because my whole attitude in life is that if I can't, I try to make things the best I can, but if I don't succeed, I don't regret afterwards and say, oh, if I only had done so and so. So your question to this particular individual is not of meaning.
Is there anything you would like to add to this interview? Having to do with the university itself, or the general philosophy concerning the university, or concerning library work?
I was very happy at Youngstown University, and I love the place. With all its flaws, it's something which I worked hard to develop, and I go there all the time now that I'm retired. I'm there three or four times a week. I'm down there. I use the library still, and I buy a parking sticker every year so I can park there. And even if I'm not there to do university business, I park there and walk downtown from the university just because I love it and I like to be there. And I still keep every time I go, I see many old friends. I don't meet the new ones as I ought to, or if I do meet them, I find as I get older that I don't remember new people. I only remember the old ones. And as just yesterday I was in, and as I came across the campus, a very nice looking lady spoke to me, and after I passed her, I thought, now I'm ashamed of myself. I met that woman 2 years ago, but I haven't the slightest notion who she is. But I see even the maintenance workers and the parking attendants are all old friends. They all shout to me from across the street as I go around the place. And I like to go to lunch at the new Wicker Basket. But I must admit, even though it's beautiful surroundings and all the people are very nice, it isn't doesn't have quite the warmth that that dirty old small faculty room in the cafeteria had years ago. There was an esprit de corps there and a fun which doesn't exist now. We all had to sit at the same table, so we all had to talk to get acquainted with each other. Whereas now when I go in, I sit down at a table thinking that I will attract a group of other people, but usually one or two come and sit with me, but everybody is divided up into tables of small conversation groups, and there isn't a big raucous group anymore at all as there was in the old days.
Just a couple questions if you could. You mentioned the heads of different departments.
Yes.
Who is the head of the Spanish department you're talking about?
Yes, Mrs. Mills. Well, she was Mrs. Mills then. She's Mrs. Margarita. It's gone from me. But she is a very active person and very lively.
And who's the head of the chemistry department?
Dr. Scudder, Eugene Scudder. And he was a product of the University of Indiana and was his main quality was his teaching. He was an excellent teacher. He didn't have a warm, outgoing personality, but he was an excellent teacher, and his department was always one of the strong ones.
Thank you very much.